Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Sabbatical 101. As you know, I had a life-changing sabbatical, and it inspired me to create this podcast and my program, Reignite Your Life-Changing Sabbatical, so I can help fellow academics plan their own transformative sabbaticals. On this podcast, I'm typically going to be interviewing fellow academics about sabbaticals they've taken or sabbaticals they're planning, but I wanted to use this episode to tell you about my sabbatical, why I did what I did, how I planned it, and how it went for me and my family. So the first thing I want to tell you is that I took a hybrid sabbatical. I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about hybrid sabbaticals, so I think I'm going to coin the phrase now. Since I started my sabbatical coaching business, I've been talking to tons of people about sabbaticals. One thing I've noticed is that many of us have an all-or-nothing mindset when it comes to the geography of sabbaticals. We tend to think that you either go away for sabbatical or stay home, and we tend to privilege sabbaticals that occur away from home. So first of all, I think we need to shift the discourse around sabbaticals and stop assuming that sabbaticals away are better than sabbaticals at home. The idealized sabbatical abroad is an old model and one that is just not feasible for many people for a variety of reasons. So if you're planning a sabbatical and you're not going away, I'm here to tell you that you can have an amazing and transformative experience and that you don't have to make any excuses for your sabbatical not being something different than what it is. The best sabbatical for you is the one that's right for you and your people in your current season. I also want to talk about a middle ground for sabbaticals, or what I'm calling the hybrid sabbatical. For some of you, it may make sense to spend some of your sabbatical at home and some of it away. This is what I did for my sabbatical, and it worked really well. I'm going to tell you why I took a hybrid sabbatical and how I planned it. So let me back up just a sec and tell you a little bit about myself so you know the context. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Teacher Education at Michigan State University. I do ethnographic research on early childhood policy issues in the U.S. and Tanzania. I don't run a lab or supervise a lot of students, so work-wise, it wasn't hard to pick up and leave for sabbatical and completely disconnect. I realize that this isn't the case for everyone, which is part of the reason why I think a hybrid sabbatical can be such a great option. So at the time of my sabbatical, my husband, Daniel, was doing a postdoc. He's in the natural sciences, which means he has to be in lab to do experiments and can't really work remotely, or at least not for too long. Daniel and I have permanent wanderlust, so when we started talking about my sabbatical, he was very open to thinking about how we could go away for at least part of it. At the same time, we were pretty sure he couldn't be away from lab for a whole year without major professional repercussions. At the time, our kids were age 5 and 9 and going into kindergarten and fourth grade during my sabbatical. So we weren't really concerned about moving them to a foreign country, but we were concerned about ensuring there was a good school option for them wherever we decided to go. So school for the kids was definitely a priority. My first idea for sabbatical was to apply for a Fulbright to Tanzania, where I've been working and doing research for the past 20 years. Daniel and I met in Tanzania, so he was very open to the idea. The only problem was that Fulbright only offers a full year option for Tanzania, which really didn't align well with our circumstances. We talked about the possibility of the four of us living in Tanzania for a semester and then him returning to Michigan while I stayed in Tanzania with the kids. So I really liked my husband, and when I tried to imagine being on sabbatical in Tanzania without him, I very quickly realized that this was not what I wanted. I didn't want to be solo parenting with him and ocean and 8 time zones away. That just didn't feel like sabbatical to me. So I'm not going to get into it here, but I also decided against a sabbatical in Tanzania when I began thinking about the purpose of my sabbatical. And I realized that what I needed most was to overcome my burnout and exhaustion. For a lot of reasons, that would have been really hard to accomplish in Tanzania. So I'll be talking more about sabbatical purpose in future episodes, and I also have a sabbatical purpose guide on my website if you want to learn more about that. So around the same time that I ruled out Tanzania as a sabbatical away option, I learned that I'd be able to use grant money to supplement my salary during sabbatical. This meant that I could take a full year sabbatical, not just a semester, and I didn't need Fulbright or additional funding to do it. I knew that I wanted a year-long sabbatical, and I also knew that our family couldn't be away for an entire year. So my hybrid sabbatical was born. Daniel and I decided our family would live abroad during the fall semester of my sabbatical and come back to Ann Arbor around Christmas so we'd be here for the spring semester. He was able to get permission to work remotely for that time, and we thought it would be best for the kids socially to move at the beginning of the school year. Because my primary goal for my sabbatical was to rest and recover and to analyze and publish from data I already had, and because I was fortunate not to need additional funding, I realized we could go literally anywhere in the world. Like I already said, I have permanent wanderlust, so this was really exciting to me. It was also really overwhelming at first to think that we could go anywhere. I would sit down at my computer and look at Google Maps and think about places I wanted to travel to, and then try to figure out and learn more about what it would be like to live there. So I quickly realized that I could spend a lot of time doing this and not get anywhere, so I developed some criteria. The first was that I really wanted the sabbatical to be an adventure for our family, and I wanted to pick a place where we would feel a place where we would like for our home base, but also have the opportunity to travel a bit and explore. The second criterion was climate. As a family, we really wanted to go somewhere relatively warm and sunny. And the third concern was affordability. So we planned to rent out our house while we were gone, but we had to try to find a place where we could rent a house or apartment without significantly increasing our monthly costs. We also wanted to live somewhere that had good public transportation and where we didn't need a car. And finally, wherever we went had to have a solid school option for the kids that we could afford. So they do attend a Catholic school here in the U.S., so we're used to paying a modest tuition. And as with housing, we wanted to keep school costs relatively constant. Because we were only going for a semester, we didn't want to throw the kids into a public school where they didn't know the language. So we knew that if we went to a country that wasn't Anglophone, we'd want to find a bilingual or an English medium school. So just to recap, I had five criteria. Number one, adventure and travel opportunities. Number two, a warmish climate. Number three, affordable. Number four, good public transportation. And number five, solid and affordable school options. After a lot more searching, I narrowed down the possibilities to four locations: on the west coast of Costa Rica, Valencia, Spain, Lisbon, Portugal, and Bordeaux, France. I researched schools and housing in each of these locations and created a spreadsheet with a tab for each location so I could estimate what our expenses would be. I love the beach, so Costa Rica was really appealing to me. I imagined our family going to the beach after school and going on these picturesque treks in the jungle on the weekends. I found a house we could rent on sabbaticalhomes.com that looked amazing, but I realized we'd need a car to get around, and I had a hard time finding a school that we could afford and that would accept the kids for just one semester. So as Daniel and I imagined what life would be like in Costa Rica, we ultimately decided it wasn't what we wanted for this adventure, and in large part because we really wanted to be in a more urban environment, but we didn't necessarily want to live in San Jose. So then I shifted my focus to small cities in Europe. Lisbon was appealing because of the sunny and warm climate, but it seemed pretty expensive, and the schools I thought would be a good fit for our kids were really expensive. You may not realize this, but lots of international schools and private schools in general charge a capital fee or some sort of an annual, like a registration and enrollment fee, in addition to whatever the tuition payment is. So in some places, that was something like an additional $5,000 just to enroll the kids for the semester. And that was on top of the monthly tuition fee. So sometimes the monthly tuition fee was pretty reasonable, but once I added in the capital fee, it just became unaffordable. So I ruled out Lisbon. And then I shifted my focus to our finalists, and those were Valencia and Bordeaux. Both cities seemed affordable, and I was able to find some bilingual school options in each city that I thought could work for our kids, and that would end up costing about the same as we'd be paying for school at home. I spent a ton of time searching on Airbnb and short-term rental sites, researching school websites and emailing admissions directors, attending virtual open houses for schools, and talking to school representatives on Zoom or WhatsApp. And so then there were a few factors that ultimately led us to choose Bordeaux over Valencia. And most importantly, and something that should have been on my list of criteria initially but wasn't, was our ability to get a long stay visa. U.S. passport holders can only stay in the Schengen zone of Europe for 90 days at a time without a visa. And because of the way the EU works now, you can't just leave and come back and stay for another 90 days. So you're limited to 90 days every 180 days. And if you think that's confusing math, it is. Trust me, I tried to figure out a way it could work. And I searched and searched, but there just didn't seem to be a workaround for the visa situation. And I really didn't want to get barred from entering the EU again if we broke the rules and were found out. So I realized that we would need visas if we wanted to live in France or Spain for more than 90 days. I initially thought Spain would be an option because they do have a digital nomad visa. But then as I started looking into it more, I realized that getting a digital nomad visa would have required a lot of really complicated paperwork, and we would have had to translate all of our documents into Spanish by an approved agency. So once I began looking into this, I also realized it would be really costly and time-consuming just to get the application submitted. So even if we were able to get to that point, it was also hard to figure out things like whether we would have tax liability as digital nomads. So I was pretty sure we'd have to hire someone to make sure we did everything correctly, which would increase the cost of getting a visa even more. And, you know, because we were only staying for 5 months, it just didn't seem worth all the expense and hassle of getting a digital nomad visa. So that left France. We're getting a long stay visitor visa is actually comparatively straightforward. You fill out an application online and then you make an appointment for an in-person interview at one of, there are something like 8 or 9 places around the country. And we were lucky that one of those locations was Chicago. So it was pretty easy to go for our interview. And the purpose of the interview is really to submit all your supporting documents for the visa. So they ask you some questions and they take all your documents, your passports, your payment, and send them to the consulate in DC. And we got our passports back with our visas about 2 weeks later. So I was actually surprised at how quick the process was once we were able to have the interview, which, you know, to be honest, it was not like super straightforward. It definitely took a lot of work, and there were things that we weren't sure about. And we also learned, you know, you have to bring passport photos. You have to submit passport photos, or you can pay extra and get the photos taken at the interview. And I thought, well, just in case, because maybe things will be, there are different expectations for passport photos in France, let's just get them done at the interview. And I was really glad we did that because they had to retake my son's photo because his bangs were covering his forehead and it wouldn't be, the system wouldn't accept the photo that they had taken. So we had to kind of slick his hair back and they had to retake the photo and then it got accepted by the system. So, you know, it was not without its hassles, but compared to what it would have taken to get a visa in Spain, I think it was pretty easy. So I would say that one thing that the process of getting a visa raised for me was the downside of not having a university affiliation during my sabbatical. If I had been a visiting scholar somewhere, it's possible that they could have helped me navigate the situation. Although if you listen to the episode on this podcast about David's sabbatical in Florence, you'll learn that even when you have support, getting a visa is not a foregone conclusion. So I won't go into all the details about making the arrangements here, like the arrangements for you know, the apartment and school and all that. But just to give you a sense of the timeline, we left for Bordeaux in August 2023. We had applied for and enrolled the kids in school that March. We put down a deposit on a furnished apartment in, I think, March or April, and we had our visa appointments in June. And we had also posted our house on sabbaticalhomes.com, and we found a renter in April. We were fortunate that there was so much interest in our house, and so I was actually turning people away on Sabbatical Homes. And so that was a really pretty straightforward process. All right, so after all that, we went to France, and we spent the first half of my sabbatical in Bordeaux. And it was amazing. I had initially resisted going to France for sabbatical because I studied abroad there, and I really wanted our sabbatical experience to be a new adventure for all of us. I had never been to Bordeaux before, and which was kind of crazy to think we just picked up and moved there, and we had no idea if we'd even like it. I had lived in Tours, and it was like 20 years before. So, but anyway, I really wanted it to be like a new experience for all of us. And so I was skeptical of going to France. But in the end, I was really glad we chose to go to France because I do speak some French and I could help navigate quite a bit for us. And we all ended up falling in love with Bordeaux, and we made a lot of friends there. We found this bilingual school for the kids, and it was perfect because it was just a really like friendly, loving place. It was a small school with like 80 kids, and they liked it, and it ended up being a great community for both them and us. So the parents were all part of this WhatsApp group, or there was a WhatsApp group for the moms and a WhatsApp group for the dads. And so anytime you had a question about something going on or how to do something in France, it was just this like built-in support network, and people were like arranging meetups in the park and having play dates and things. So it was great. It was just exceeded our expectations for what, you know, the kinds of connections and community we could build in just 5 months in a foreign country. We loved taking the tram all over the place in Bordeaux. I mean, the kids and I spent the first 3 weeks after we moved there just kind of like taking the bus around and taking the tram around and going to the public swimming pool. We loved the food, obviously. Oh my gosh, baguettes and pastries, the wine. And we did a lot of traveling around France, and we went to a bunch of other amazing places in Europe. But, you know, most of our time in Bordeaux was just doing daily life, you know, the usual stuff, getting up in the morning, going to school, and then coming home from school and doing homework and making dinner. But, you know, it was all a bit magical because Bordeaux is such a beautiful city. And the other thing that was different for us was in France, kids don't go to school on Wednesday. It was great because obviously, I was on sabbatical and I didn't do any work on Wednesdays, and the kids and I took day trips, or we explored Bordeaux, or we met up with friends, and we also did a lot of traveling. And then in October, the kids had 2 weeks off from school, and we went to London, Venice, Tuscany, Rome, and Nice. It was unbelievable and just extremely transformative for our family. So like I said before, my personal goal for my sabbatical was to really overcome my burnout and exhaustion. So while we were in Bordeaux, my personal focus was on rest and recovery. And I did very little work. I mean, actually, I did almost no work for 4 to 5 months. One of my goals for sabbatical was to get back into running. So I ran almost every day, which was lovely because there was a great place to run along the river and tons of other people out, which just made me feel like I was part of something. And while we were there, I trained for a half marathon, which I ran in Nice at the beginning of November. I also made friends through a kid's school and through a Bordeaux Moms Facebook group. So once or twice a week, I'd meet up with a friend for coffee or lunch. I explored the city. I read novels. I did jigsaw puzzles. And I spent more time with Daniel and my kids than I usually get to. So then we came back to the U.S. right before Christmas, and I settled into the second phase of my sabbatical. And one thing I realized while we were in Bordeaux was that I would need to be intentional about making the spring, the second half of my sabbatical, feel like I was still on sabbatical, even though my environment and energy were very different. So in Bordeaux, I really had this like energy of exploration. I told you I have wanderlust. I love to travel. So it was really easy to just, you know, have a different rhythm for my day and do different things. And I was really worried that I would come back to Ann Arbor and just like kind of retreat into my basement where my office is and just, you know, work from 9 to 5, and it would just be kind of like any other semester except without teaching. So I needed to make a plan. What I did to make sure that my spring, the second half of my sabbatical, would feel different. First, I signed up for another half marathon, so I'd have to keep running, even in the dead of Michigan winter. And I also enrolled in a pottery class. I had never done pottery before, but I decided to try it because I wanted to do something during my sabbatical that, you know, I wanted to learn something new and do something that I wasn't already good at. So it turns out, and I think I anticipated this, but using a pottery wheel requires an incredible amount of concentration, which also made it perfect because I wanted to learn to do something that I had to really devote my full attention to. So I wouldn't be like checking my phone, checking my email, getting distracted. And it totally worked. Like, I honestly was not that great at pottery. I have like 100 tiny ramekins, but I loved the class and I ended up signing up for a second class after the first one ended. During the second half of my sabbatical, I did start working again on my research. I started up again probably mid to end of January, but I decided I was only going to work 3 days a week. And I tried to keep my Mondays and Fridays open to just kind of do whatever I wanted to do. And the thing that really surprised me was that by mid-January, I was actually excited to re-engage with my work. That was not how I'd been feeling in August. Before the start of my sabbatical, I honestly worried that I'd never want to get back to my research. But it did happen. Overcoming my burnout and exhaustion also created space for thinking about the business that I started during my sabbatical to help fellow academics plan their sabbaticals. Planning my program, talking to so many friends and colleagues about their sabbatical experiences, and launching my business in May 2024 was a ton of work, but it was also so energizing. And it's honestly been so rewarding to work with my clients and to see them get really excited about their sabbaticals and just come up with new ideas and insights about how to make their sabbatical truly transformative, no matter what their circumstances. So that, my friends, is how I ended up taking a hybrid sabbatical. You know, while I would have loved to spend a full year in Bordeaux, the hybrid option was the one that worked best for my family, and it was a great compromise. What I loved about it, too, was that it challenged me to think about how you can be really intentional about creating rhythms and routines during a sabbatical at home so that it feels different from a regular semester. I work on this with my clients all the time because I believe it's really important to not just let your sabbatical happen to you and hope for the best. If I wasn't clear on what I wanted from the second half of my sabbatical, I probably would have spent my energy on the wrong things and ended up regretting that time. Instead, I was able to learn something new, achieve some personal goals, create something new, and really get clarity on where I wanted to go with my research. So in the past 4 months, I've talked to over 50 people about their sabbaticals, and the thing that stands out the most is that there is no such thing as a typical sabbatical. We all have circumstances in our lives that create both opportunities and constraints for what our sabbatical time can be. But I also think there's a ton of room for creativity and moving beyond all or nothing thinking when it comes to sabbaticals. Maybe you really want to go abroad for your sabbatical, but your current circumstances won't allow it. Could you go on some shorter trips, even by yourself? How could you approximate the feeling you think you'd get by living in another place in your own town or city? Could you commit to learning something new or working on a hobby you don't usually have time for, or just something as simple as meeting a friend for coffee regularly? I think one of the real privileges of sabbatical is that it allows us time and space to get out of the daily grind and have a different rhythm. And while it's a lot easier to do that when you physically go to a new location, you can definitely also do it if you stay home for your sabbatical. So as you can probably tell, I love talking about sabbaticals. I hope you'll keep listening to the podcast to hear more stories from academics who are planning sabbaticals and from those who have taken sabbaticals. If you want even more insight and content, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, where you can check out my blog and sign up for my monthly newsletter. And if you're thinking about or planning your sabbatical and you'd like some guidance, please reach out so we can chat. I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.